mindset. It's about conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The Warrior's Mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
I went to a meeting. We spent more time crying and talking about God than we talk about anything else. That means more to me than anything. We spent more time crying and talking about God than anything else and connected. And he believed and he understood without being a martial artist, talking about the warrior's mindset and all these things we can do together. And I'm thinking it ain't going to pan out. And then one day we had a warrior's mindset at our school. Y'all remember this guy just walked in from nowhere? I'm like, what is he doing just showing up? This guy goes all over the world, negotiating, talking with the president, you know, making opportunities for our community. And when you talk about books, because I got one of his books as a part of my reading. He got so many books out. I mean, he's like, to even have him here today to make time for us is really, really important. He's really the authority in talking about collaboration. And for us to come together and try to make this collaboration happen in our industry, if we're going to make Warrior's Mindset work, we need somebody like him who's not a martial artist but a business person that understands how to build successful businesses. Now, let's go back. Remember I told you about community engagement and what was the community center that we said we were working with? Who remembers? In Baltimore. What's the name of it? UAL, right? Under Armour, right? So guess who got a program in Under Armour with Ray Rice, right? No, Ray Lewis. Mr. Wallace. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, they got the STEM, and I'm like, oh man, God, making all this happen. So for him to come, we have now our keynote speaker, you know, coming because he's trying to really help this grow and connect. We have Mr. Robert Wallace from Vist Technologies. Let's give him a hand, please. Just got in from Africa too, so right? So you're a little jet lag.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. How you guys doing?
Good.
As mentioned, I was just in East Africa. Anyone here ever been to Tanzania? They say Tanzania, but we say Tanzania. How about Kenya? Once.
No, West.
Oh, West, okay. Ghana, Liberia.
Yeah.
So I'm just getting back from Tanzania and Kenya, and you probably know the people that occupy that part of Africa are the Maasai people. I was blessed; they gave me a gift, my Maasai belt. So it's a little colorful, but I like it a lot. And Maasai warband was the gift from the chief there. And the reason I share that with you is the Maasai people are known for a lot of things. But one of them that you may not be aware of that they're known for is their warriors. They're herdsmen, they herd, but they're also warriors. And I saw something, and I've gone there a couple of times. We built an orphanage in Tanzania. We built hospitals and clinics and schools. But we built the orphanage in Tanzania, which is right in between Mount Meru and Mount Kilimanjaro, right? The two highest peaks in the continent of Africa, right? And so it's a very exciting time, but we spend time with the Maasai tribe while we're there. And I saw something, I've seen it before, but I saw it again, which really kind of ties into, I think, what we trying to do here. I mean, when we met and connected, just in terms of your vision and your mission, I thought it was very appropriate. And what I saw is, you know, Maasai, they wear, I have some pictures, I don't see any power. So we'll just talk about it. I had a picture, some of the pictures of the Maasai. They wear these bright red, you know, robes as they navigate through the plains of East Africa. And I had heard that they are able to intimidate lions, you know, like a pride of lions, right? You know, lions don't play. They're probably the most efficient hunters and killers in the animal kingdom in Africa. But the Maasai have been known to intimidate lions. And at first, I didn't believe it. Come on, how are you going to intimidate a pride of lions? Known hunters and killers in the animal world in Africa. But they took me out, and they showed me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we were out in what's called Ngorongoro Crater. If you ever go to Tanzania and you go on safari, you want to go on Ngorongoro Crater. It is a natural crater that's been in for thousands of years. And the animals in there have just been there for eons because they can't get out because they're in a crater, right? Very steep walls. You have to drive down steep embankment to get there. So we're in the crater, and there's this pride of lions. And these guys inside, they see the lions. So we're going to show you how this works. And what they did was, they're like five or six of them, right? So they have these red robes that they wear, right? And they have the spears, they have the club and the daggers, all the weapons. But in this case, what they do is they line up side by side, and they take their robes, their red robes, and they combine them such that the five or seven warriors look like one big warrior. And they raise their hands, and they walk towards the lion pride, the lion group in there. And the lion does not know, in the eyes of the lion, this is this big, competitor or threat. And you see them, they kind of rush back and forth, you know, kind of figure out, what is this thing, right? And they ultimately, they run away. I said, wow, I never thought that could happen, right? But it talks about the power of entities, in this case it was the Maasai, working together to achieve a common purpose that they could not achieve by themselves. I would wager that had it been one warrior out there trying to face down a pride of lions, he or she probably would not be around today to talk about it. But when they combined together and they shared their robes as to make it look as if it was one monolithic body, then the lions got nervous and got confused. And so they ran away. And so what I talked about is the importance of learning how to build alliances and partnerships in order to achieve whatever objective you have, whatever your purpose is, right? Now, how many of you here believe you have a purpose? I hope you all do, because I don't think God created you by a purpose, right? Same for me, purpose, right? Unfortunately, a lot of folks don't know what their purpose is, right? And that's okay. As long as you're living, you have the opportunity to figure out what it is and then get on track. But whatever your purpose is, what I'm suggesting to you is that you will have a greater probability of achieving it if you figure out how to build alliances and partnerships with people and organizations to help you get to there. I can tell you, I've been in business now going on 30 years. I started an IT business. We did some pretty big things in information technology. Started an energy company. We built the largest solar plant in Baltimore City. We're building the largest one in Howard County. We've done microgrid engineering, all these kind of... I'm an engineer, by the way. My degree is in mechanical engineering and applied mechanics from New York, Pennsylvania. So I'm an engineer. I'm a boring gearhead, right? Technology is what I do. And then along the way, I've written all these books. I've written soon to be 8 books. I've written books on alliances and partnerships, on entrepreneurship, on leadership, all these things. Right? So I've done all these things, but I would tell you that I could not have done any of this without having partners, without having people who were smarter than me, who had more money than I had,
who had better access to decision makers than I had, who had more power than I had.
That is as honest as I can be. You know, yeah, I get all the accolades and all that, but I tell you something. So they voted me into the Business Hall of Fame, which I still don't think I deserve, but they did. So, you know, but we went there, and I insisted that my wife come up with me. Right? Been married now almost 40 years, 5 kids, 7 grandkids. As a matter of fact, I took my 2 grandkids with me to my trip to Africa. So now we have 3 generations of Wallaces in Africa, right? And so I insisted that she come up with me to receive the award. And they were, whoa, we just want you. No, if she doesn't come, I ain't coming. Mm-hmm. I ain't going up. Mm-hmm. So they agreed. She came up and she stood beside me. And I told them, I said, you know, I've been blessed. I get all the, you know, my name's what shows up in lights. But if you really want to know the reason for this success, if you really want to know who really should get the award, it's this lady right here, right? Because nothing I have done, I could have done without God and my wife, right? And then there are other people too. But in terms of close proximity, God, my wife. So what I'm saying to you, beloved, is I don't care what you're trying to achieve in life. The key is, how do you do that through alliances and partnerships? And so I've written a book about it, and I have a 12-step model that I've taught. I've taught it in Africa. I've taught it in Europe. I've taught it in Asia. I've taught executives how to go about building alliances and partnerships. I'm not going to do that today because I don't have time won't permit. But I do want to emphasize the importance of that. And I'll give you a couple of pieces of that because it also ties into this idea of creating wealth. Because, and creating wealth is not a negative thing. Can I get an amen in that?
Amen.
It's amazing, especially when I talk to spiritual people. When I talk about wealth creation, they get real nervous. The room gets really quiet. Because in their minds, they have concluded that there's no connection between, I would say, now I happen to be a Christian, but I'm going to generalize and say spiritual enlightenment and wealth creation. They think that the two should never come together. And I have studied all world religions that I can find, and I have not seen a single one where it says, thou shalt not get wealth. Thou shalt not be wealthy, right? And so that's important because we know to do things, to do great things, to help people around the world, you need resources. Can I get amen to that? You need resources, beloved. For me to go to Tanzania and do orphanages and hospitals and clinics and to fly with nurses and doctors and all that, guess what? At the end of the day, somebody has to sit down and write a check. You have all the talk you want, all the good intentions, all that's good. But at the end of the day, some woman, some man has to sit down, take out their checkbook, and write a check. To build their orphanage in Tanzania, which is one day I'll show you pictures. I mean, it took a lot. We've been in there 12, 13 years, right? It took a lot of money. And so what I'm saying to you, these two things, wealth creation, why it's important. And how do you do it? You do it through figuring out how to build partnerships and alliances with people and entities that share your mission, that share your vision, and that share your common purpose. Right? Folks, I'm telling you, if you figure out those, if you master those two things, talk about the warrior mindset, if you master those two things, there's nothing on this planet you will not be able to do. I am a witness. Everything I've ever done, I've talked about everything I've ever done, they told me I couldn't do. You know, we're both from Baltimore. I'm from the projects in Cherry Hill, South Baltimore. My mother was a recovering alcoholic, 8 boys, you know, 2 or 3 kids to a bed, rats, roaches, y'all know the story, right? Everything I've ever done, they always told me I couldn't do. When they told me I couldn't be an engineer, they said, you're not smart enough. They told me I couldn't get into an Ivy League university. You're not good enough. told me I couldn't start a business. You've never done that before. Nobody in your family has been an entrepreneur. Told me I couldn't write a book. I couldn't be an author. Well, you never, that doesn't fit your background. You're an engineer. Everything they told me I couldn't do, I've done by God's grace. People have helped me walk creation. Because this whole thing in the Bible that love covers the multitude of sins, which is true. But I would also add to that, that wealth covers a multitude of sins too. Because you can do a lot of things, a lot of good, if you have the right mindset, the warrior mindset. And so I'm here just to share with you those two perspectives. Now, I've learned that the best way to create wealth is through entrepreneurship, the fastest way to do it. And you guys know this. It's second nature to you. You know that. You look at the people in our society who are wealthy. They tend to be businesswomen and businessmen. You can go down the list. I was just with an event in Baltimore yesterday, Wednesday, with Warren Buffett. You know who he is, right? Okay. Michael Bloomberg. You know who he is, right? And Blankfein, Blankfein's president of Goldman Sachs Bank of Wall Street. Three of the richest men in the world. And we sitting there talking about what I'm talking to you about. Now, I'm a little baby in the room, but I'm nowhere near where you guys are, right? But just being able to break bread with them and to talk to them, right, about why this is so important. And so you look at the wealth in our society around the world, it is businesswomen and businessmen who are entrepreneurs. And so you and I have the same potential to be a Warren Buffett or Michael Bloomberg, right? Because there's something in you that God gave you. There's an idea, there's a solution to a problem, there is a different mindset that you've been given. That is your seed and my seed to do great things, to build wealth. But the purpose of the wealth is to do good. And this notion that business people are bad and greedy and evil, do you guys buy that?
Oh, sure.
I mean, some of them are. Okay. But you have poor folks who are greedy and evil too. So would you rather be rich and greedy? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just saying, right? So, but the idea is this. So if you accept my premise that entrepreneurship is the key to accelerate wealth creation. I mean, what you guys are doing, and with this warrior mindset and martial arts and the convergence of those things around enhancing communities and building a base that people can be the best they can be, that has value. That has value. And that can be monetized. So when we met first time, that's what I saw. I said, yeah, I see this. I see it. Although I'm an engineer, I've done little boxing. My father was a boxer. My dad was a sparring partner for Joe Louis. You guys are too young about Joe Louis, but called Brown Bomber. But daddy was one of his sparring partners. So I come from a family of boxers, and so I understand that dynamic, right? But with that dynamic is the opportunity to strengthen communities and to enhance human value and to make the world a better place. And when we met, that's what I saw in you. And I saw that vision. I said, although I'm an engineer and you're a martial arts expert, our shared purpose is the same. It is to do good. To do good with the gifts that God's given us. And that's why we get together. So, I want to talk to you about entrepreneurship. Because that is, in my humble opinion, that is the seed and the engine and the energy behind wealth creation. If you can figure out a problem that exists in humanity, that exists in society, and find a solution to that problem, you will be a very wealthy woman, a very wealthy man. Warren Buffett told me that. He said, you know what? He said, all you got to do, of course, he sounds simple, because he's like $100 billion, whatever his net worth is, right? But do you know he's giving away 95% of that? He says, I want to give away 95% of that wealth before I die. You know who else does that? It's Bill Gates, who is number one businessman in the world, right?
These are the most richest people in the world, but yet they understand the importance of sharing with humanity and making the world better. And so, and when I researched this, and I have for the last 30 years, I've written 8 books. My first book was on entrepreneurship. There are 4 things that I found, and I want to share with you, and then I'll take questions. There are 4 things that I found that was common across all the successful entrepreneurs that I studied, right? And I was in grad school at the time when I began this study. I was a grad student at Dartmouth, at the Tufts School of Business, at the Dartmouth College up in New Hampshire. Beautiful New Hampshire, love New Hampshire. And that's where I began my research. And so, in doing the research and studying all these successful business people, there are 4 areas that they really mastered that I really want to leave with you that I think will help you to think about what your gift is and how you can turn that gift into wealth, how you can monetize your gift. And I think that's what successful people do. They monetize their gift. I mean, I look at Warren Buffett. I mean, if you look at this guy, you know, suits all ruffled up and, you know, shirt, you know, all disheveled and, you know, glasses and walk like this, you know. I mean, this guy, you would never know the wealth and power this man has, because visual, the optics can be deceiving. So never make assumptions about people, right? With your mom and dad, what you many, many years ago. But so there are 4 things, there are 4 areas I want to leave you that I found that are important to success as an entrepreneur that will lead to wealth, right? And along the way, what makes it even go faster and better is building alliances and partnerships to help you get to your destiny. So the 4 things, the 4 areas. First one is, and I call them the 4 quadrants, right? The first one is to know thyself. To know thyself, right? Why is that important? It's important because you and I, on a personal level, we are the basis of any success, anything we do, we're the basis. We are the engine. We are the starting point. And the starting point, in my opinion, for you and I should be, what is your gift? What is your gift? What do you do well? What do you do better than 97% of people in the world, right? For me, at a young age, it was very clear to me that my gift was in math and science, all right? Math was easy for me, physics, fluid dynamics, statics, I mean, all that kind of that techie stuff, it was easy for me. What was hard for me, believe it or not, was English and history and those kinds of things, right? That, I struggled with that, but math and science, A, knocking it out, right? That was my gift. So I knew early on that if I was going to do anything in life that would be significant, it would probably have to be around math and science or technology, because that was my gift, right? But what is your gift? Do you know what it is? I see a few nods, right? Most folks don't know, and that's okay. But here's the way to look at it, to look for it. That is, what do people tell you that you do really well, and they tell you that consistently? That's one side, right? What they tell you you do well? Man, you did a great job. You did a great job on event planning. You're a great marketeer. Boy, you're great with money, okay? Good side. The second side you look for is, what do you enjoy doing the most? What do you enjoy? I told you my story. Math and science. I like math. I like physics. I can, you know, if you take me to a library, I'll get lost today, right? Because I'm like, you know, that kind of guy. That's my strength. That's my gift, right? So what do you enjoy? What do they tell you you're good at? And what do you enjoy? You put those two together, you're probably getting very close to what you get. I'm suggesting that once you determine that, then your business idea or your business effort should be centered around that gift. It doesn't have to be exactly that gift. If it can be in the neighborhood of that gift, you're going to be close. You're going to be close to where you need to be. So now when I look at deals, business deals, I would tell you 9 out of 10 of the deals I do or are serious about tend to be around technology plays, right? Every now and then I venture out of that circle. But for the most part, 9 out of 10 times, because that's my sweet spot. That's what I do well. That's what I know. That's what I'm good at, right? So I tend to say that, right? So know thyself. Now, in knowing thyself, there are three pieces you got to consider. And you all know this. Your mom and dad taught you this, right? The three pieces you got to consider always. And if you miss one of these, you're going to be off track, right? One of them is intellectual self. There are three selves. Intellectual self, right? That is this brain God gave you, right? It is how you make that best. How do you make that better each day? Do you know what time most of our young people spend in front of TV and media? They did a study on this. It was scary. What would you guess they spend, how many hours a day on average? The average American child spends in front of media. I'm talking about TV, internet, Snapchat, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, da, 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 da. How many hours a day would you guess?
Seven, eight, 14
hours a day.
Wow.
Think about it. How many of you have teenage kids? I had teenage kids, but they're all grown now. But my goodness, do you know if they're always on their phone? Even when you're in the car, they're texting, and it is incredible. So my point is, how much time do you spend improving yourself? Mm-hmm. Well, I tell young people. How much time do you spend reading? You know how many books Warren Buffett reads, how many new books he reads or tries to read a month? Probably about four or five. I mean, he's constantly reading. Here's a man who's, is he three or four, richest man in the world, whatever he is, right? Here's a man who's made his money. Well, yeah, he's like, I'm reading new books because I'm constantly working on this. And I'm the same way. I try to read two or three books a month. Right? Because I have this thirst for knowledge. This thirst for knowledge. This passion for knowledge, right? So, okay. So that's intellectual self. Then there's physical self. Warrior mindset. Martial arts. Whatever it is, right? The physical self, right? Because if you are not in your top condition, you can be. You will not be at your best. And you won't be competitive. You won't have the energy. You won't have the innovation. You won't have the insight or the passion because your body just pulls you down, right? So what you guys do, I'm not sure how many here are in martial arts or whatever, but you all look pretty healthy to me. That's important, right? So when I go into a field, you know, I was telling Ben, I said, I still play basketball with guys half my age. I use that as a barometer to see if I'm maintaining, right? Mm-hmm. Last year, I had the opportunity to play basketball with Shaquille O'Neal. Check out the house in Orlando, Florida. A couple of us got invited down for a business meeting. And between the meetings, we played basketball. He has his own private court, you know, his own gym, right? And I will tell you, I'm not bragging, but I'm just saying, I will tell you that I held my own against these guys, right? I held my own against these guys. So physical self. And then there is spiritual self. Intellectual, physical, spiritual self. Yes, I said spiritual self. Why do you think that's important? Why is that important? Well, I told you I'm a Christian, proud of it. Someone here may be a Jewish faith, some may be a Muslim faith, or other Buddha, or Confucius, all whatever your faith is. What I'm talking about is spiritual self, and how I'm defining it is, even though I'm a Christian, I'm defining it as a belief in something that is greater than yourself. You can be Muslim, you can be Jewish, you can be Christian, whatever you want to say, but it is a belief and something greater than yourself. Why do you think that's important? Talk to me. Why do you think it might be important?
You always got something to reach to.
Amen, sir. What's your name, sir?
Keon.
Absolutely. I call it hope. Call it hope. See, when you believe there's something greater than you, then what you're doing is you're viewing your life through eyes of possibilities and vision and future versus physicality. See, when I was a kid in Cherry Hill, South Baltimore, if I had seen the world through my eyes of flesh, these eyes, I would have said, I ain't got no chance. My mother's an alcoholic. We're living in the projects. We don't have any money. We don't have any heat or electricity. I would have said, forget this, I'm out of here. But when we have the proper doses of spiritual self and believe that there's something greater than us that exists, then you say, okay, I may be poor today. Mama might be an alcoholic at this moment, but it doesn't have to remain this way. Hope. That's the power of spiritual self. And that's why it's in my book. I talk about that. And even from a business standpoint, believing in it. So when I go into a deal to compete, whatever it is, whether it's IT, energy, meat, whatever it is, guess what? I expect to win. I expect to win. I don't go expecting to lose. I expect to win. Why? Because of who I am and who I belong to and my belief system. I expect to win. Now, I don't always win. I lose more than I like to lose, okay? But it's a mindset. It's a mindset. What will you choose? Okay. So that is knowing thyself. That's first phase. Second phase is know thy plan. Know thy plan. Know thy plan. And my friends, a plan simply is a bridge, as I look at it, as I say in the book. It's a bridge. A plan is a bridge for you and I that will bridge the present with the future. So when I got out of engineering school and then later on graduate school and I said, I want to start a technology company, at that point in time, I had no company, right? My vision was to have this company. So there's this big gap between where I am today and where I want to be down the road. To bridge that gap, I need a plan, okay? And I teach entrepreneurs around the world, the way you create a plan is very, very simple in my view. What you do is you create the future that you desire in your heart, in your spirit. You create the future, and then you work backwards. You create the future, then you work backwards. And so, in my case, I said, okay, let a technology company, what must I do? What must I do to build this technology company, right? Three things I knew I had to find. I had to find money. I had to find customers or a concept of what I would offer. And then thirdly, I had to find people. Because business is about people. Not about computers, not about technology, not about feeds and speeds. It's about people. Business is you convince a person that you can help make their life better by whatever you have to sell. Martial arts, computers, whatever it might be. That you can make their life better with your solution. And they are willing to pay you money for you to apply that solution to their life. That's business, right? If you do that enough times, then you're gonna be successful. You're gonna make money, and the money will create wealth, and then the wealth will create possibilities for you and I to do great things around the world, okay? So the second phase is know thy plan. Know thy plan, right? Okay, the third phase. It talks about the principles, know thy universe. So what I'm saying in know thy universe is this. So what I've learned in business and life is that there are rules and guidelines for everything. There are rules of success. There are guidelines to success. If you're in certain industries, there are rules in that industry. There are guidelines in that industry that shape the winners and losers in that industry. For example, for many of you, when I started, when I got out of grad school, my first job was with IBM. You heard of IBM. This is back in the 80s, right? So I was a systems engineer at IBM, right? So I show up the first day of work. I show up, talking about rules of engagement and success. I show up my first day of work at IBM. I have on a blue Ivy League blazer. I have a nice, crisp blue shirt with a nice red little tie. And I had a pair of khakis, and I had a pair of ping over loafers. They had pennies in them. Show up the first day, get through the day. I'm about to leave my first day at IBM. A manager calls me in the office. I never forget it. She said, "Buy a seat." She said, "Bob," he said, "we're glad you're here at IBM. We think you got a great future at IBM."
And we wanted you here because you were an engineering undergrad and you were a business graduate, and that's the model of employee that we're trying to build. She said, only one problem. She said, if you want to be successful at IBM, you have to change how you dress.
I said, really?
I thought that was pretty nice, right? She said, Bob, this is back in the 80s. She said, Bob, first of all, we wear white shirts. We wear dark suits, the men. And we wear what was called wingtip shoes. White shirt, dark suit, wingtip. She said, if you want to be successful at IBM, this is how we dress. Now, that was a rule of engagement at that time for IBM. What she was saying to me was, Bob, it's your choice. You can continue to wear that Ivy League blazer and that blue shirt and that red tie and loafers, and that's fine. That's your choice. But she said, if you want to be successful at IBM, and I'm telling you as someone who's been here for 30 years, these are the rules of engagement you need to understand. So what I'm saying to you and I, is that we have rules of engagement, and whatever industry you find yourself in, whatever purpose you're trying to achieve, there are going to be rules of engagement. Any IT business, when I go to business in IT, there are rules of engagement. When we build solar plants, right, I'm dealing with the PSC and local jurisdictions and all that, there are rules of engagement. So the other book I wrote was called Soul Food, and talked about the 52 principles of business success. And one of the things that I talked about there, so there was one principle for every week of the year, right? And one principle that I talked about was, and I got a lot of heat for this, but it's kind of fun, is the dumb down principle. The dumb down, right? Dumbing down, right? You all look to me to be very intelligent people, right?
You do.
Even you, sir, and even me, right? But sometimes it doesn't pay to be the smartest woman or the smartest man in the room, at least not optically. In other words, you may find yourself in a situation where you are the smartest person in the room. You may have the best idea and the best solution, best product. But wisdom says you got to know when to let that light shine and when to throttle it back. I will tell you, in my years in business, there have been clients that I knew from my instinct that if I came on too strong with my intelligence, it would scare them away, and I wouldn't win the deal. So what you got to do, you got to throttle back that brilliance, right, and make the customer feel that he or she is in charge, and that he or she, that the solution is his or hers, even though the solution might be yours, right? Because sometimes you have to throttle back. That is an example of rules of engagement, depending upon where you are. Now, that rule may not be applicable in Silicon Valley, because Silicon Valley is a different world. It's like, who's the smartest? Who's the brightest? Who can get the best ideas out there the quickest? That's a different environment than where I was working at the time, which was in government contracting. So I had to know when to let my brilliance shine and when to throttle it back. That's the rule of engagement. Okay. That's the third phase. The fourth and last phase is know thy resources and make them thy own. Know thy resources and make them thy own. What I suggest there in the model, as I said at the outset of my comments, you and I cannot be successful. I will even go as far to say, it is impossible. It is impossible for you and I to be successful in whatever we do without other people helping us. Beloved, I have never met a woman or a man of success who told me that they didn't have anybody who helped them along their way, along the journey. Not a single one. Not a single woman, not a single man, right? They all have confessed there were people along the way who helped them. And so I'm telling you, I believe strongly that that's going to be key. But the question is, how do you get people to help you? How How do you get people to help you? I can tell you, probably like many of you, I get a zillion phone calls a day from people all over the world who want to help, or they want to do a deal, or they want to, you know. Okay, how do you get help? How do you guys get help? Do you need help? Anybody here ever need help? I put two hands up, right? How do you go about that? What are the three things you need to do, that we need to do, which I still do today? I still have mentors. Yes, sir, please.
One mentor is ask.
Okay, and before they ask, and that's right, sir, you got to ask. Absolutely, sir. Before they ask, it's the H word.
You have to understand that you need them.
And what, that's exactly right. And what's the word looking for? You got to humble yourself. Yes, sir.
Humility.
Humility, right? You have to, as you said, sir, you have to admit, I need help. One of the hardest things I had to get over, because us guys, we have something called ego. I mean, ladies do too, but they manage it better than we do, guys. The male ego, I can do it by myself. I don't need men. That's why men do not like taking directions on driving directions from their wives.
Yeah.
I know where I'm going, honey. You and I don't need you to tell me what to do, and they get lost. We get lost, right? And she said, I told you so. I told you so. Right? Yeah. We as men have that ego problem. So humility. Recognizing, man, I need help. I can tell you, my friends, I can tell you, God knows. Boy, I've gotten really good over the years at being able to humble myself and say, I need help. Will somebody help me? I remember a couple years ago, I think I may have told you this story, but we had just lost a major contract. And unfortunately, in this case, I've made many mistakes in business, so I could write a library of books on my mistakes, right? But one of them was that I allowed this one customer to become too much of my revenue. They were more than half of our revenue, right? And I wasn't thinking. I was a little arrogant, and a lot of arrogant, and lost the contract. And was that close to going out of business, right? Because that was such a big part of our business dream, right? And I can tell you, and I'm not ashamed to tell you this, that was a low period where you've had moments in your life where every day you cry. Y'all don't do that. Y'all don't know about that. Keep on living. Keep on living, you'll find out. Keep on living and you'll find out. Where at the end of the day, after my staff left, I didn't know what to do. I was trying. You've been at a point in your life where everything you have tried, you're trying, is not working.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a bad place to be. A tough place to be. I mean, everything, all my education in engineering and grad school and all my experience at IBM and DuPont, Procter & Gamble, I was trying everything I could think of to right this ship. Man, and it was not working. And I'm now looking into the abyss of failure. So every day my staff left for the end of the day, I go in my office and I cry like a baby. Because I didn't know what to do. I was trying everything I knew how to do. It wasn't working. It wasn't working. Now that is a spiritual experience. Because when you recognize that your best is not good enough.
Amen.
When your best is not good enough. That's a humbling experience. And you will drop to your knees and you will cry out, somebody help me. That's what I had to do. Somebody help me, right? So I was able, by God's grace, to continue fighting and staying in the race. We were able to turn the ship around. Took some time. Took some humble pie, right? But we were able to turn it around and right the ship. I'm just saying to you, humility, sir, as you said, first step. Second step is ask. You'd be amazed at how many people will help you if you only ask. But we're afraid to ask, right? We're afraid to ask. And then the third piece to making it work is of knowing our resources and making your own is when you ask and the person you're asking gives it to you, do what they say do. It's amazing the people that come ask for help. And you tell them what to do and they just go off and do something totally different. Guess what? Those people should never come back to me again because you wasted my time. If I've taken time to get to know you and to give you the benefit of whatever I know, knowledge I may have, and I tell you what to do, and you don't do it, you're not serious. You're wasting my time. Go talk to somebody else. Don't come talk to me, right? Those three things. Because what I'm saying to you is that we need help, all of us need help, to achieve our mission, to achieve our purpose. And the way we do that is to ask people. I will tell you, so we, in my company, we were in IT. We pivoted into energy about 10 years ago, right? Now, we hadn't built any solar plants at that time, no wind plants, no battery storage, microgrid, no energy information system. We'd done none of that 10 years ago, okay? But we pivoted from information technology services to energy services. You know how we made that pivot? By asking for help. Now, we were clear on the future we wanted. Remember, create the future, work backwards. Well, I was clear on what the vision was. But I didn't have experience doing the building solar plant. So what I had to do was to ask for help. And I had to partner with entities that could build pieces of that so that when we came together as a unit, we could build these big solar plants. And we were able to go from zero panels, solar panels, right, to over 500,000 installed last year, right? Through partnering, alliances, and asking for help. So friend, I'm telling you, the model works. It really does work if you execute it, right? And I have the research to show you that it does. Some people listen, some don't, and that's okay, that's how life is. Some of us will listen and take it, some of us will just go one in, go out the other, come out the other, it's fine. But I'm here today to tell you because that's where I think it's important for us. So on that note, I will end my formal comments, but I'll take some questions. For anyone? Thank you, sir. Yes, sir, please.
I have a question. When you were talking about Moonlight Universe,
yes,
and you broke down the rules of engagement.
Yes, sir.
A question. How do you gauge the rules? Certain people come, I'm a graphic artist.
Okay.
Certain people, and you mentioned the analogy with the at IBM.
Yes, sir.
There are situations that I find myself in where you will take that advice, where you'll
yes.
wear the suit, or you'll wear, right. or you'll put on the white shirt,
uh-huh.
and certain people are out to get you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they're going to set you up.
Yes, sir.
So it's like
yes, sir.
In that scenario, like this is a hypothetical. If you're at IBM and suddenly they go, okay, well, you know, now you conform with everybody else,
right, right.
And you sit around you're with your watch waiting for something to happen, and nothing happens. How do you gauge that situation?
That's a great question, and it's a very honest question. It's a couple of things. What I try to do, whenever I go into a new environment, sir, whether it's a new market, a new industry, a new customer, whatever it is, the first thing I do is I try to identify the people that have been successful in that environment, right? Because success leaves a trail. It leaves a trail. It's not hidden. It's not secret. It's like if you follow it, it will leave a trail to show you. So I try to look at who's been successful in that industry. And then the second thing I try to do is to build a relationship with that person or that company. So I give you an example. So we're trying to really grow faster now in the solar world because the tax credits are going to drop in a couple of years. So we're trying to get as much deals done as we can in the next 4 or 5 years. And so our strategy is, who is the most successful solar developer in the world? Not just U.S. in the world, right? I wonder who he or she is. So identify who they are, and we're doing that now. And then we build a relationship with them and say, hey, look, we can work together to build out this solar industry globally. And I was in Tanzania, we were talking to companies there were in energy in Tanzania and Kenya. I'm having the same conversation. Okay, how can we work together? Who was a player in Tanzania or in East Africa, right? Who was the biggest solar player, and how can we work together? And you do that enough times, you're going to be in the atmosphere of success. Okay, and you are, you're right, sir, you're going to have enemies. That's us being a human being. You got some people who get it and some who don't. You got some who like you and some don't. And some will not like you for no reason at all. They just say, I like how you look. Okay, I mean, they'll find some reason not to like you, okay? That's the way it is, right? But there are enough men and women out there who will like you, who will want to see you successful, and it's up to you and I to find those people. And sometimes, sir, it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. When I go to conferences, I have a metric, and I'm saying, I want to meet, whatever, it depends on the conference, I want to meet 10 people that I can engage with after the convention is over. We may share commonality, maybe we have shared common vision about business, whatever it is, right? But have a metric with you, right? And then you follow up with that. It's amazing to me how few people follow up. They'll get your business card and you never hear from them.
Yeah.
Most people do not follow up because they're not focused. They're probably not very, very serious. And they're probably overwhelmed. They probably have kids at home or, you know, contracts or cash flow issues or whatever the case is. We're all overwhelmed. So those are some reasons. But if you follow up with most people, you can get some traction, things begin to happen. That's my opinion, sir. That's a great question. Yes, sir.
How important is continuous education and what value could you place upon it?
Continuous education is essential. It's essential. Now, it doesn't always have to be book knowledge. It could be an event like this. It could be, as you and I do, talking on every now and then we talk, hey, Bob, what do you think about this? What do you think about that, right? Just sharing a brain power. Why is that important? Because the world we live in, it is an innovation and knowledge-based economy. It is based upon what you know and how well you know it and how well you can apply it. So that's why I say my goal is to read 2 or 3 new books every month. And I have a book list that I go through. Because I want to know what's happening in the world. I want to know what the best minds are thinking about, right? And that's where opportunity comes from. So it's critical. It's critical. Because human knowledge and human experience has no limit. Has no limit. You guys know we only use a very small fraction of our brain. You guys know that already, right? Imagine if you could double that usage. Let's say it's 2%. Okay, whatever it is. If you could make it 4%, you'd be way ahead of the rest of the world. Imagine that. So I think that's going to be critical, man. Critical.